You're listening to ESPN 100.3 FM, KLRZ, La Rose, New Orleans, and the River Region.
It's the Sports Hangover with Gus Kattengill.
Hello, sports fans.
Well, hello there.
Local sports, national sports. The GCAT has got you covered.
Oh, you made a wise choice, my friend.
Time to tee it up and let it fly. It's the Sports Hangover with Gus Kattengill.
Check it out, Jordan.
Hour number three, going to talk a little hoops with Dino, bottom of the hour. Tonight, game number four, the Eastern Conference Finals. Jordan, the intern, says Cavs got no shot, which is why he's an intern. You have LeBron James. He has a shot. Of course they have a shot. Especially considering our next guest to lead things off, Mr. Marlon Favorite. Coming up next segment, Cordy Worsham. We'll touch on Billy Cannon's passing away yesterday at the age of 80. His thoughts on quarterback Joe Burrow becoming a Tiger. The school officially putting a release out today that he is on the roster now. He's official. He's an LSU Tiger. We'll touch on that as well. But we bring in Marlon Favorite as we do on Monday and Fridays. I can talk a little football. Marlon, how are you this afternoon?
I'm right in the heat of football, man. I'm at Berman Stadium. I took a little lunch break to come over here and check out Rummel and Landry Walker. And let me tell you something. Landry Walker has some receivers, buddy. They really do.
Look at you already scouting for next season. Marlon, one of the things I definitely want to get into, obviously, is the Saints and OTAs. And we touched on it on Friday, the difference between, especially when you're a rookie or a young player, or you're trying to make this team and the vets come in. But I definitely want to touch on what we didn't get a chance to on Friday, and that's Joe Burrow becoming an LSU Tiger. Your coach, you know, you're close to Coach O. You're close to a lot of players there. You're part of the LSU broadcast team as well. What are your overall thoughts on the school bringing in Joe Burrow?
I like the idea of bringing him in. Out of high school, he was a top 10. He was a top 10 dual threat. At the quarterback position after the 2014 season. So I think he does bring a different element. That's what I like the most. I actually was talking with Coach Mickey Joseph. He said, man, he actually likes the young guy as well. So, you know, he graduated. He had school out of the way. I mean, obviously. So there are some things to look at for him as well. So I'm interested in seeing him this fall, Gus. I want to see how his arm looks. I want to see if he's the key piece that we're missing. And he made that position a lot more competitive as well. So I look forward to seeing him this fall.
Well, Alex Hickey on SECCountry.com promptly puts up a piece a little bit ago, goes, hey, most likely quarterback to leave now for LSU. Clemson has a five-star quarterback that's transferring. Joe Burrow left Ohio State. But of the quarterbacks that LSU has right now, which one do you think is more likely to try to go find somewhere else to get some playing time? Justin McMillan, Miles Brennan, or Lowell Narcisse?
If I had to pick a guy, I would probably say Justin McMillan. I think he's really just getting to the point to where he's honing his craft, and he might want to go give it a shot somewhere else. I mean, the other guys are young. Obviously, if anything happens, obviously Coach Miles Brennan will have the slight edge because he had some playing time last year, right? So I think if someone were to transfer, it would probably be Justin McMillan, giving his age and, you know, wanting to give himself an opportunity to get on the field and compete.
One of the things that you and I touched on Friday, just you and me, I was saying, you know, how do you balance if you coach show that fine line of that word that you give your players that, hey, you can decide on the field your playing time. And a player has to buy into it and believe it so he can work as hard as it is. And how do you look in that quarterback room to guys that, you know, have been there for over a year now, Marlon? Even guys that, like Narcisse, got in early in school last year and then, you know, does all the work in the spring, does what you tell him to do, and then you make this move. How does Coach O balance that fine line of, I got to win, so I got to bring in competition if I have to, but at the same time, you promised those kids a chance to prove it. They haven't just yet.
I mean, I think the best way Coach O can approach this is just to be honest. Hey, I'm still keeping my word. You still have a chance to compete and handle your business. It kind of takes me back to this time. I'll never forget it. I was with the Carolina Panthers, and it was a GM switch. Marty first came in, and I remember, you know, kind of hanging around in the defensive line room after Gus, and my coach said, hey, Favorite, what's wrong? sit down and rest our thumbs up with you. Are you worried because we brought in some other guy? Hey, look, you have tunnel vision and you focus on your position and don't worry about who else is coming in. So that's probably along the line of something that Coach O may say, hey, we brought you here. We want to keep our word, but it's a job. It's a business. You're going to have to compete. Just because we're bringing in a new guy, that doesn't mean, okay, he's going to automatically start and you guys are going to – y'all don't have a chance. That's not what it means at all. It means step your game up and compete. And that's the bottom line.
How did you handle it?
Man, Gus, to be honest with you, bro, I went out there, I strapped my helmet on, and I did the best. I was the best Marlin favorite that I could be. That's what I focused on. And unfortunately, I ended up getting cut, so it didn't work out. But the point, it really opened my eyes to not only, hey, man, you're here. They selected you to come here for a reason. Make a big impression. And that's what it's really about. And that's the advice I would give those guys. You don't want to just jump around here and jump around there, especially if you're still young. For Lowell, he has 4 more years. You know, obviously, he has the most time to at least have an opportunity to start somewhere down the line. So I was just really mainly focused on critiquing my technique and just becoming the best player I can be.
Speak with Marlon Favre. You can join him over on Twitter, BigFave504. So the Saints OTAs begin this week. Cam Jordan already out there saying, hey, look, he's looking forward to seeing this young defense sort of improve. And it all starts here. You and I have talked about this, that these OTA practices are as close to training camp practices as you can get. Then you have the same 3-day schedule for mini camp, and you got a 6-week layoff, and then it's on, Marlon. Because once camp starts, maybe aside from that first week, it's really going to start narrowing down how many snaps you can get, because now you're trying to get your team ready to start the regular season, right? You know what I'm getting at? So if you're a young player, right, player trying to move up the roster spots or the depth chart, isn't OTAs and minicamp these next 4 weeks the biggest point for you to make some sort of impression?
Oh, absolutely, because every time is the right time. I'll tell you why. You don't know if after OTAs they're going to want to keep other guys that they're looking at. You don't even know if you're going to be able to make it to fall ball, right? If you're somebody that's walking on, that's an undrafted free agent or a late draft pick. So you want to take however many reps you get, whether it's 2 reps, whether it's 10 or 15 reps, and make them all count, because, again, it's not promised that they're going to bring it back this fall. So you want to take advantage of that OTAs if you can.
Yeah, no doubt. So it'll be interesting to sort of look at from that perspective. Sheldon Rankin's entering his 3rd season. What should I be looking for on these couple of Thursdays that we can kind of look at, especially in minicamp? What's a progression level for him that we should maybe be expecting in his 3rd year?
Well, for Sheldon Rankin, he's now a veteran. He's had a full year. I would expect him to increase his game. The 3rd year is always the charm, right? He's no longer a rookie. He had a healthy season. So what I expect out of Sheldon Rankin is that quick guy up the middle, very active hand, plays with decent technique. I look forward to seeing him really putting all that in motion, being that for sure guy, possibly a top tier lineman. A defensive tackle. Interior defensive guy in the 2018 season. He has that ability. I think he could be that guy for the Saints. He could be a guy mentioned with an Aaron Donald or Cox out of the Eagles. So I'm excited about him being in the middle. The big question is, who else is going to step up in that interior line? Is it going to be Onyemata? Is it going to be Davidson? Is it going to be one of those rookies that came in? Again, if I was a defensive tackle and I'm with the New Orleans Saints, and I see it's not a for sure starting shade, I would really take full advantage to try to slide in and try to make it happen. Hello.
There it is. I'm looking forward to, again, I get they're not in pads, but you can only evaluate what you can evaluate. And Marlon, even though there's no full contact and you're not going to be wearing the shoulder pads until training camp, you still have to be able to evaluate and get your team ready. So we'll see what some of these guys can provide. And I know, especially for those interior guys, it's hard to kind of judge if you're winning a play or not, but at the end of the day, I can see if Sheldon Rankin's in the backfield, he won that play, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Tackles for loss count. They really do. It makes that impression you want to see.
Sounds good, man. Thanks for your time today, bud. Appreciate it.
Oh, no problem, man. Thanks for having me.
Wait. I forgot. Cavs win tonight?
I tried to get off the phone. I knew you were going to keep me on a little longer.
Well, you said 2-2, though. I'm trying to make you Marlon Stradamus. I mean, you said 2-2 going back to Boston back on Friday, and I laughed at you. They took care of business Saturday. Do the Cavs even up the series tonight?
Well, again, of course they up the series tonight. As I said, tomorrow morning when we wake up, it'll be 2-2, and the Cavs will have broken even. And you don't want to go. Again, this is a young Boston team, right? You don't want to go 2-2 with this guy. You want to put this fire out when you can. Mm-hmm. Hello, somebody. So I'm looking forward to seeing exactly how this game is going to go tonight. But we know how this game is going to go tonight. Ain't that right, Dino? Because, Dino, I know you're somewhere out there listening, brother. Ain't that right?
Dino's coming up in 15 minutes. Thank you, Marlon. Appreciate it.
I'll take care, guys. See you.
There he goes. A big fade 5-4. See? Look at that. He thinks it's going to be – I do agree with this. If it gets tied, Boston's pressure level absolutely goes up. There is no doubt if that takes place. As Jordan shakes his head. Quick break. We come back. Cody Worsham, TigerRag.com is going to join us. We'll touch on Joe Burrow. We'll touch on Billy Cannon passing away at the age of 80. And really, that legacy leaves at LSU. And how visible he really was the last several years over in Tiger Stadium and in around the community as well. So we'll touch on that. And the SEC Baseball Awards just came out. LSU's shutouts of the first and second team pair of freshmen were recognized. We'll touch on all of that and more. It's the Sports Hangover on ESPN New Orleans. That's Cody Worsham's the way to follow Cody over on Twitter at Tiger_Rags. The way to follow TigerRag.com on Twitter. And you can go on the website, TigerRag.com. Joining us here to talk a little Tigers. Cody, what's up, man? How are you this afternoon?
Doing well. How are you?
Doing fantastic. Obviously, we'll touch a little bit on Joe Burrow. But obviously, Billy Cannon passing away at the age of 80 yesterday. Big news. And really, in the last several years and even months, he's been visible, right? I mean, I saw a lot of pictures over the weekend, yesterday on social media of times that he's taking pictures of people and in Tiger Stadium, just things of that nature. He absolutely, I guess if you think LSU legend, it's Billy Cannon.
Yeah, Billy Cannon really softened in his old age, and I don't mean that in an insulting way. I mean that in a complimentary way. He was always very tough, very hard-nosed, a guy that lived life on the edge, if you will. The things that made him great at football also turned out to be pitfalls in his character and things that got him in trouble in life. But, after he served time and made amends for his mistakes, he really became almost a constant presence around LSU. I mean, I probably saw him at least once every year, if not more than that.
Right.
He was always available for speaking engagements. He was always willing to make time for fans. So he's a guy that, he has a complicated past and a complicated legacy, but there's no question that he's the best player to ever play for LSU football, and a guy that certainly seemed to me at least later in life to reflect on his mistakes and realize what he had done wrong and try to do as much as he could to make those things right.
I think what you just said there at the end is the part that really struck me. Obviously, we know so many of the other aspects and parts of his story, and that's why I let off that way, Cordy, is because you saw him a lot in purple or in purple and gold or being at Tiger Stadium, taking pictures, there with the Heisman, things of that nature. It almost like, towards the end here of his life, he embraced his part with LSU and really the school as well, kind of embracing him again. Because at times it was kind of strained, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. There's this. I'm gonna go a little bit of on a little bit of a detour here to get back to my answer. There's
sure.
A really good book by John McGinnis from the mid 1980s called The Last Hayride. It's about the 1983 Louisiana gubernatorial election, and in there's a chapter and I'm going to paraphrase the title. I don't remember it off the top of my head, but it's essentially every city needs a myth. And it talks about Billy Cannon as sort of the myth of Baton Rouge, the mythical hero of Baton Rouge. And if you think back to that time when he came through LSU, Baton Rouge was a city in transformation, a city really growing from a small town into a city, and it didn't really have an identity to hang its hat on. You know, it was this kind of in the shadow of New Orleans. It was this industrial city, you know, built on plants and refineries, but there wasn't much in terms of identity there until Billy Cannon made LSU football, and until Billy Cannon put LSU football on his back and won the national championship in 1958 and then won the Heisman in 1959, then Baton Rouge became a football town, and that's a legacy that still exists today. I mean, every calendar year in Baton Rouge is defined by, and I'm kind of paraphrasing again from John McGinnis here, when LSU loses its first football game and when it's not that year. It's not the year when LSU loses the first football game, but when Billy Cannon came through, it was the year. So all that to say that Baton Rouge, or Billy Cannon, gave Baton Rouge an identity, and I think in his later years after, you know, his name had been tarnished in the public eye just mm-hmm. about everywhere else in the world, I feel like Baton Rouge gave Billy Cannon his identity because he felt that legend. He felt that love and that support here despite all the things he had gone through. I mean, like, days after he got arrested in the 1980s, I think it was 1983 or so that he got arrested, they were, like, printing out $100 bills of Billy Cannon's picture on them as, like, joke gifts. Right. And instead of E Pluribus Unum on them, they said, "Go to hell, Ole Miss." Like, people loved Billy Cannon even at his lowest point. So I think, you know, that's why later in life he was around so much.
Yeah, trying to think of a more famous LSU Tiger, you know, from beginning to end, really, when you look at it. Great way to kind of talk about it there. Speaking with Cody Worsham, TigerRag.com. Now, Cody, the other big news over the weekend, of course, came Friday afternoon, and Joe Burrow did decide it was LSU over anywhere else, and he's now into the quarterback competition room. Obviously, the school announcing it officially today. He's on the roster. There he is. I threw the poll out there today. Four options, right? Is it unfair to current quarterbacks? Just win, baby. Sends a bad message to the team, or the more competition, the better. And it's 44% the more competition, the better. 44% just win, baby. The other two, just 6%. So, Cody, definitely seems like LSU fans just want to win. And if he helps the team win, it helps the team win.
Well, I mean, that's the nature of college athletics. Like, you come to college and you get your scholarship, but that doesn't guarantee anything but your education will be paid for, really, for a year. I mean, it's not a four-year contract. Loyalty only goes so far, and if you can't win a job, if you can't earn a job, then that opens up the right, if your program has more scholarships, to bring in people that can win the job. I mean, I've been in college athletic programs. I've seen guys absolutely waste scholarships, just have talent mm-hmm. and not fulfill that talent for whatever reason, whether it was a lack of work ethic, whether it was a lack of interest, whether it was any number of reasons. I don't think that's the case with the guys on campus for LSU. I think you have three very different quarterbacks that are going through three very different processes in their development. But that was a position that had to be upgraded. I mean, those three guys, all three of them had a chance this spring to name themselves the starter with consistent play, and none of them could do it. So that gives the program every right to go out there and get somebody who can win you games. And I don't know much about Joe Burrow. I've seen some film. I watched his spring game. I watched every throw that he made in that game. I do know this. He's better than every single guy that LSU has on the roster at quarterback, and it's not even close. I mean, he may not be the best long-term. Like, mm-hmm. one of those other guys may develop into a better player than him, but right now there's no question in my mind that he's better than anyone they've got. And he might be as good as Danny Etling was. Like, he may come in and you may have no drop-off at the quarterback spot. And if that's the case, and you've got the defense that LSU projects to have, and the guys that they like at wide receiver, and some flexible, versatile options at running back, like, maybe next year isn't as doomed as so many LSU fans were thinking. Maybe it is a chance that LSU can win 8-9 games, and if things go according to plan, or if things go break right for them, maybe they can win more than that. But, yeah, that's what college sports is about winning. And so LSU went out and got them a quarterback they think they can do that.
It's interesting you say, Cody, it's about winning, and it's also maybe just a sign of the times. I saw you retweet Chris Lowe of ESPN, and he has an interesting tweet that makes a lot of sense, right? Transfer quarterbacks have popped up a lot on big stages recently. Four of the last eight national champs, runners-up, or college football playoff participants have been quarterbacked by transfers. Mayfield, Coker at Alabama, Marshall at Auburn, and Newton, even when you go back all the way to 2010. So I guess it isn't as odd or as not to do as it really is. I mean, it's kind of what it is. If you can go find talent, no matter what it is, I mean, now LSU may have some guys they're going to transfer, and other schools may benefit from it.
Yeah, you know, I noted this when Joe Burrow committed to LSU, that if you go back over the last 10 years for LSU and you look at the three best seasons by QBR, all three were by guys that transferred to LSU. Zach Mettenberger had the best one in 2013, and then Danny Etlin had the two next best ones in 2017 and 2016. So LSU's had success recently with transfer quarterbacks. And I also said this at the beginning of the spring when Ed Orgeron was talking about bringing in a grad transfer at cornerback and maybe a grad transfer at running back. And I said, look, I'm okay with bringing in grad transfers. I think that they can work in certain situations. Cornerback and running back are not the spots that I see that being most beneficial. If you're good enough to play corner and you're good enough to play running back, you're either going to play at the college you started at or you're going to go to the NFL when you graduate. You're not really going to transfer to a Power 5 school and impact, certainly go from one level to a higher level, which is what LSU would be doing. A quarterback, you can. Only one guy can play a quarterback. And a place like Ohio State that continues to not only recruit quarterbacks but develop them, I mean, there's going to be schools that have a surplus of quarterbacks. So, I almost say this half-jokingly, but there's some truth to it. Like, LSU should probably just start outsourcing its quarterback development to like Ohio State until they can figure out how to do it themselves. So, like, yeah, we'll take your Danny Etlings and we'll take your Joe Burrows.
Yeah.
We'll take your Zach Mettenbergers and, you know, we'll sign one every now and then and see if we can develop them. And if not, we'll let you develop them free of cost to us for two or three years, and then we'll take them and win some football games with them.
Isn't that incredible? Like, you can't think of why, even just, I was saying earlier on the show, Cody, why you couldn't, I guess, solidify or get a quarterback in the recruiting process this year and signing day when you have the receivers that you were able to bring in, including one of the top in the country, if not the top for some rankings and ratings as well. I don't understand why it's so difficult to find a quarterback to come play at LSU that you can develop for a while.
Yeah, I mean, part of it is that in-state, Louisiana doesn't produce a ton of elite quarterbacks, so you're pretty much always having to go out of the state to get a quarterback. That's part of it. I mean, the other part of it is that LSU does have this bad reputation at developing quarterbacks. I mean, like I just said, in the last 10 years, they haven't developed a good one. I mean, who's the best one that they've signed as a freshman and sent on? Jarrett Lee, like, was he the best guy? Jordan Jefferson? The list is not long and it's not good. I mean, they haven't really done it well since DeMarcus and Matt Flynn. And before that, it wasn't very well done here either. So it's difficult. It takes some consistency. You know, I think part of it is who your head coach is. Like, LSU hasn't really had either a head coach or an offensive coordinator that's renowned for developing quarterbacks like they did when they had Jimbo Fisher. So, and it's crazy. Like, that's the most important position in football. Of all the sports, like, if you look at the importance of positions across all sports, there's probably none that has more of an impact on wins and losses than the quarterback spot in any college sport. Like, it's other than, like, maybe an elite baseball pitcher. And even that guy only plays one game a week. So it's such an important position. LSU's been so bad at recruiting and developing it. We'll see if Steve Ensminger can fix it. If not, it's on to the next guy.
No doubt. It's still the great enigma that is LSU football, especially at that position. Cody Worsham's the way to follow him over on Twitter. @Tiger_Rags, the way to follow TigerRag.com on Twitter. And, of course, the website to go get the info. Thanks for your time, as always, man. I always appreciate when you chat with us.
Yeah, anytime.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you. Quick break. We come back. We'll turn our attention to hoops. As Jordan, the intern, shaking his head. Why are you shaking your head? What are you reading? What are you reading over there? What?
Just, you know, LSU fans were recruiting
what?
Joe Burrow.
Yeah.
And tweeting at him, saying, come to LSU.
Yeah. Come save us. What? I mean, I just read off of your computer screen. He's good for two or three more wins.
Two or three more wins.
Well, I'm reading the 24/7
Sports. Is that going to get us into the?
Well, I'm just saying, I'm reading that article that says if Danny Etling hits two throws against Alabama, they beat him in Tuscaloosa. I'm asking you, when you watched that game last year, was LSU two or three passes away from beating Alabama?
No. Delusional.
It'll be an interesting season, won't it?
I'm an LSU fan.
Yeah.
Good LSU. It's not going to look pretty.
You got no hope, huh?
No hope.
I'm
looking forward to the basketball team, honestly.
You're looking forward to basketball?
Yeah.
Coach Oh No for...
Coach Oh No.
Yeah, for Jordan.
I like that.
Oh, man. All right, Gino Hanson, he's on deck. Or should I say at the scorer's table? See? See what I just did there? That's a basketball reference. See?
Don't stop making these puns.
What? That's how you learn.
You're making...
Intern.
You're making a joke of yourself.
Nope, not at all. Eastern Conference Finals, game number four tonight. I just realized what you just said. Sports Hangover continues next at ESPN New Orleans. Absolutely disappointing, and I don't mean that we get to chat with Dino Hanson. At Dino Hoops 11 is the way to follow him over on Twitter. Dino, what's disappointing is I set up my own scenario here in the basketball little goal that we have set up here in studio, Dino. It's the same one that we had, you know, back in the day in the hallway. And I set up the scenario, point one to play. I'm to the line because I drove to the basket, got fouled. So I got two free throws or down one, Dino. I make both. It's the ball game. I make one. We're going overtime and join the intern. How did I just do?
He bricks both.
I didn't know. I hit the rim on the other rim in and out. The other one I bricked. So I choked, Dino.
I was booing
in his ear. I absolutely choked. Yeah, he was booing me right next to me.
I had to give you the game experience.
I know.
So now you're working in construction. Just like Jordan said, you're throwing up bricks now.
That's exactly what happened. Dino,
and...
I...
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say.
The fact that you couldn't handle Jordan, the intern, booing you, you definitely wouldn't be well in an arena then.
Well, he was booing. He was booing really loudly.
Yeah,
it was like right in my ear.
Right, or
just one person.
One person compared to 18,000.
Did you save that
in an NBA arena?
Look, here's what I. So basically, you're saying I'm basically the performance that I saw on Saturday and Sunday, because I don't know what to think of these series anymore. We haven't had a close game in any of the conference final games. Is it hard for you to believe, honestly, that every single game has been a blowout and for Houston to lose by 41 points?
Dude, that 41 last night was beyond comprehension. I don't think there was anybody that could have ever predicted it being that way, which is kind of scary when you think about it. The fact that Golden State has one game without Steph playing as well as he did. So you're in that same breath of saying, so you mean to tell me if Steph plays lights out all the time again, this is what the rest of the series is going to look like? And it also, it bodes not well for Houston, because Golden State has already won one in your place. So they've shown you that they can. Question is, can you get game number four, which is the pivotal game in this whole series, both of the series, tonight again and tomorrow when they play?
I would say more for Boston, only because, look, it is what they is. They have to play team everything, right, Dino? Team offense, team defense. We've seen LeBron sort of kind of will those guys to play better, as we saw miraculously in game three, but you don't want to be 2-2, right? And then something happens at Boston, because I feel if Houston wins game four, Golden State can just come back and beat them again by 41.
Well, as far as Cleveland goes, real quickly, you definitely don't want to go back to Boston 2-2 if you're the Boston Celtics. You want to do what you can to steal this game tonight. But the interesting thing is, will LeBron's supporting cast give him the support that he's needed in game four? Boston, on the other hand, like you exactly alluded to, is the fact that, hey, they have to play team basketball. What would really help is if Al Horford can play with the same veracity and the sense of purpose that Tristan Thompson is playing with, because we know that's going to be one of the key cogs tonight. They've shown you when Tristan Thompson plays on Al Horford, it changes his entire life, which makes you say, well, as a coach, if you know Tristan Thompson is the main impact to your team, why not play Tristan Thompson more? It just baffles me. And as far as Golden State series goes, Houston is in desperate need of getting this game four because they literally looked – they started off really well early on in that game last night, and right. then it was as if they were just oblivious. But, Gus, I'll tell you what's really crazy about this, and I can't tell you the last time I've seen this. This is including the bench as well. Do you realize that Golden State starting lineup, everyone was over plus 21, and the bench was also over plus 7?
Gus, the entire team was plus. The entire team. And just a quick explanation to our listeners, plus minus is essentially, Dino, when you're on the court, your team it scores, and that's what the plus means, or you lose, you know, where the – you know, the lead, or you have a negative effect on the game. For everyone correct. To step on the floor and you increased your lead, that's incredible.
Bro, I was literally blown away last night once the game was over, and I'm going through every little stat line piece by piece, and I'm looking and I'm like, what do you mean plus 21? Everybody that scored. I'm like, hold on. And then you go to the bench and you're like, wait. The only person that didn't have a plus was David West because he didn't play. That's the only guy. You're like, oh my goodness, this is, and to show you the opposite, which is no surprise of that for those who are listening. Well, what happened with Houston? Everybody had a minus and minus 12 or lower, dude. That means that you didn't even show up in the game. Gus,
Aaron Gordon had a minus 33.
I mean, oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
I mean, to lose by 41 points in a finals series is just unfathomable.
So let me ask you this. You've watched a lot of hoops. You've played a lot of hoops. Your life is hoops, dude. You're hoops. Yeah, I mean, your Twitter handle's DinoHoops11. You're hoops. I've never – can you explain why all these conference games are like this? I mean, we haven't had a single game go into the fourth quarter that it hasn't been decided.
Gus, this is taking home court advantage to a all-new different level. I really cannot recall. Like, maybe since the 70s that – I think I saw a stat or something like that. Like maybe 1971, 72, that you've had blowouts like this where no game has been under a 12-point differential. And no question, home court plays an important part in you getting wins in the playoffs. I mean, that's why you fight so, excuse me, that's why you fight so hard to get the home court advantage. But that doesn't always work in your favor. But for there to be such a huge disparity in the fashion in which it is, it's really mind-boggling, Gus. I don't ever recall series of the East or the West being this uncompetitive, if you will, that the margin would be that wide. I mean, you're talking about the night before also with the Cavs beating Boston by 31-plus points. You're like, what is going on? To play bad on the road is one thing, but to play this atrocious?
Right. It's not even close. It's not even competitive. It's crazy how that works.
When you
look at it. So, look, Jordan the intern, you know, I don't even know how he says this. The Cavs have no shot at winning today. Maybe I should have read the story, Dino, that money is currently being raised for a LeBron statue in Akron, Ohio right now. that there it is right there. So they're raising money for a statue over at Akron. They're hoping to raise $1 million to commission a life-size statue of James. Dino, any hopes that you, me, anyone, we can get a little statue going? Little pint size? Pit size? You know, a little something?
Brother. I mean,
doesn't have to be life-size.
A
rendering, a
Jordan the intern's going to get mad at me.
Yeah.
Because it was supposed to be a secret between he, myself, Steve from NOLA East, Amito, and so on and so forth. We all have been raising money for the past 2 years to get a statue erected in your honor. We've been working on this for a few years now, and to this point, we've managed to raise $2.25. Years.
$2.25, years in the making, huh?
Years we have been working on this, and, you know, we've reached out to many of people.
Well, here's the thing. Well, and according to Joey, they're now protesting to tear down that statue and remove it because it's a misrepresentation of what basketball really is. That's excellent, Joey. Appreciate it.
You know, and I'm sorry, I forgot to mention Joey as well.
Yeah.
In that, I didn't want to leave Joey out. My apologies, Joey, but he's right. There's going to be a statue taken down already of you, and it's not even up. That's crazy.
Hashtag goodbye. Hashtag goodbye, Gus. I like that, Joey. I like that. That's, you know what?
Love you, man.
I'm not surprised, but it's true. I would take it down, too, if it represented basketball. Although you could have, well, you know, me on the back in the days in the West Bank, you know, the driveway game.
Well, fortunately, given the fact that you were shooting bricks earlier, the statue was going to be bricks, of course, to make you feel good.
Made of bricks. All right, so tonight, look, I'm going to go Boston. I'm going to go Boston in this game. Who do you got tonight?
You know what's funny? When Jordan said that, I felt that already earlier today, and you saying that as well. So I hope you didn't nail Gato Negro, but I feel Boston was going to get the game tonight in advance as well because his supporting cast, I don't think, can have a repeat of what they did in Game 3.
No doubt. And tomorrow night we'll talk about the Warriors and Rockets. Jordan's giving me the throat-slashing sign that it's over there. I'll say this. I think one of the things that's got to happen is maybe Chris to kind of control the game a little bit more. I just think the Rockets are at their best when Chris Paul's almost kind of running the show, which is crazy to think. But we've seen already in the series, Harden can score 41 and they lose. And really in the game that Houston won, I felt there was more Chris Paul in it. Am I wrong in it?
Well, you know, the interesting thing about it, in Game 2, there was definitely more Chris Paul. But, you know, here's the scary thing about this Golden State Warriors team, even with last night. When you think about it, Klay, who had been playing extremely well, he only had 13 points last night. Iggy only had 10, and Draymond only had 10, despite Draymond getting 17 rebounds. So the bulk of Golden State last night, the starters were KD with 25 and Steph with 35. That being said, they dismantled Houston in that fashion without even having to get more production from Klay and from Draymond on the offensive side of the ball. And Quinn Cook, you know, yeah, it was only garbage minutes and so on and so forth, but he wound up putting up 11 in 5 minutes. Kevon Looney played big for this team as well. They just have so many guys that can just fire on you, and that's the scary thing about Golden State. They just got guys that, you know, in most situations, if three of your guys that are on the starting five don't play extremely well, like I said, 10, 10, and 13, you're going to wind up losing that game. But with Golden State, you got Steph and KD. You're like, hold on, man. You got literally weapons that are just coming at you no matter how you do it. And with Houston, when they get on that ISO ball stuff, bro, that is just their Achilles heel. And the thing about it, Gus and Jordan and Joey, they're so quick to going back to this mindset of, let me go to ISO ball. And you're like, no, guys, it doesn't. Matter of fact, Gus, you remember how the past few years, up until this past season, how the Pels would do the exact same thing? All of a sudden, the ball would stop moving. Guys would start going one-on-one.
Yeah, how did that go over?
It didn't work at all. Team basketball is going to win, especially right now in the finals and in the playoffs and definitely going into the NBA finals, not just the conference finals. So they most certainly need to learn to do things consistently. Remember, we talked about that with the Pels for the longest time. We have to be more disciplined and consistent.
Right.
Houston literally looked like they didn't even belong on the court against Golden State last night. It was almost why are they even in the NBA finals?
It was remarkable. And Dino, go to ESPN.com, the homepage right now, to get you ready for tonight's Cavs-Celtics story, the main page. You ready?
Oh, I'm looking at it right now.
Big old square. What does it say? LeBron James NBA story can't be told without these 13 moments. Right before 13. You get ready. Yeah. Yeah, these 13 stories, shockingly written by Brian Windhorst, the king scribe himself. You can go catch up. This is good reading right before the game tonight, such as the first summer of LeBron. You can go see what that was like for him. Also, Lunch with the Legend, how he had lunch with a basketball Hall of Famer. I'll let you read into that so you see who it is. It's not who you might think it is. Also, you can catch up on how he had a comforting conversation back in 2009. The President and the King, the day he met Barack Obama there. Fantasy, still not reality. That's another topic. That's when he was in the movies, Dino. Hanging up 23 everywhere. You'll find out what that means. Let's see some other stories you can read. An early meeting with a future rival. Ah, the beginning of the Cavs-Warriors. Have I interest your... Got piqued your interest? Just taking his two-wheeler to South Beach when LeBron rode a bicycle on South Beach. That's a story you can read. The night Miami ended Linsanity, because I know you can't wait to read that. And finally, the incredible streak within a streak. All the numbers that they will find ways to let you know how good he is. And there you have it. Oh, and when he sang to people, 25,000 people showed up to watch him give a speech. Back in August 2014. Dino, all of these are in the 13 stories to commemorate his 13 postseasons that you have.
First of all, I feel like you're mocking the king, the greatest ever.
Put on a
uniform, and you're making fun of the 13. And let's not forget number 14, when after I was partying with them when the Cleveland Cavaliers were in the NBA.
Yeah, that one didn't make the cut. I remember that, yes. And, there was not a Photoshop at all of you on the team playing shirtless like J.R. Smith.
The team playing, the club, the parade.
Yes.
I mean, it was just epic, the greatness that is LeBron. And I'm honored to be one of his court jesters.
Well, on that note, it's all the time we have for Dino Hansen. At Dino Hoops 11 is the way to follow you on Twitter. We'll talk tomorrow about
real
this
quickly,
game tonight.
I got to do this real quickly for you. I met this guy Friday night at the Ritz-Carlton. His name is the Captain. He was also extremely involved with a lot of the horses that were going on at the fairgrounds. The reason why I say that, he specifically says he only listens to Sirius XM Sports ESPN Radio Satellite and the Sports Hangover. How much he loves the show. It's his birthday weekend, this past weekend. He's been celebrating for the past 2 weeks. His name is the Captain. He lives in Metairie, not too far from you. I have to give him a birthday shout out. Dude, you want to talk about one of the most fun people I've ever met in my life. So happy birthday to the Captain, man, and thanks again for being such a loyal listener of the Sports Hangover. With the D-Cat, man.
For sure,
the Captain,
man. Thank you, Dino. Appreciate it. Happy birthday to the Captain. We'll chat again tomorrow. Adios, muchachos.
Talk to you later, brother.
Yep. Quick break. And then the graph. Live from Clearwater, Florida. Maybe it's raining still. We'll find out next on ESPN New Orleans. To Clearwater, Florida, we go, where, of course, there he is. You hear the music. It only mean one thing. The graph, the voice of the Tulane Green Wave. Todd, do you see the sun over there at all?
The answer, Gus, is a resounding no. I am walking on the beach as we speak. We just got back a little while ago from what was supposed to be a practice at beautiful Spectrum Field, which was rendered useless by the rain that came through. And instead it was basically watching guys hit in cages underneath the stadium, which to me is about as pointless as it gets. So, it's no fun watching BP in cages. It's
right. No,
not.
No. I understand. So you got the tournament, though. Your game has been moved up from 6 to 11. Is it the only one that got moved up?
No. Actually, the game ahead of us, we were supposed to play at 6 o'clock New Orleans time tomorrow night, and the game ahead of us, which was supposed to be at 2 o'clock, was East Carolina and UCF. That game has been moved up now to 9 a.m. locally, 8 a.m. back home. So there is rain expected at about 4 to 5 o'clock tomorrow, so they're just trying to beat it. And that's basically it.
Todd, it's interesting. I spoke with Alex today, Cody Worsham as well, a couple of other folks about college baseball. It seems something like not right, right? Out of some twilight zone that we're going into conference tournament time in the state of Louisiana, and really, not even theoretically, very realistically, the state could be shut out for postseason play.
Yeah, it's really been a strange year, Gus. And, you know, I go back to 06, where the Green Wave was actually the only team from Louisiana to get in that year. And that's really the last time I can remember this type of, well, what you would call futility with all the state teams. It's just, you're right. It's something that is very out of the ordinary. And I would hope that it's going to change next season. But, yeah, it has really been a down year in college baseball in the state of Louisiana. It really shouldn't be. It should never be. But sometimes it happens. You get through these cycles. But I would assume, again, Gus, next year it's going to be a lot different. And you're going to see the regular cast of characters back in there.
Got 2 minutes left here before we have to break for the top of the hour. And Matt Moscone, after further review, Tulane, Houston tomorrow. Look, the Green Wave took the series from the Cougars. Anything you can take out of that, or is with tournament and with everything you got to go, it's kind of a game all of its own?
No, I think it's going to be a game all of its own. Now, again, there is the confidence knowing that Houston can be beat. Well, look, Houston won the regular season championship, which is no small feat considering the Americans, the third-ranked RPI conference in the country. But, and the pitcher that we're facing tomorrow, Aaron Fletcher, won the Conference Pitcher of the Year award. I mean, he's really good. But we beat him back in New Orleans. So there is that sense of confidence. You know, the other teams in our bracket, ECU and UCF, were combined 0-5 against them. But you could argue 4 of the 5 games Tulane really could have won. So there's really no high above anybody else team in our bracket. It is without question winnable, Gus. We just got to do the 3 things that you need to do to win baseball games, and it's so much more highlighted in tournament games where every pitch and every out is so big. But pitching, defense, timely hitting, Gus, I mean, you got to do all 3. 2 of them aren't going to cut it, not in a tournament situation.
It's Todd Graffanini, the voice of the Tulane Green Wave. As always, we appreciate your time. And Todd, try to stay dry, and good luck to the Green Wave.
Even the golf is a little cool, Gus. I've got both feet in the golf right now as we speak.
Well, it's nice for you to be risking life and limb to give us the latest on the golf.
I mean, give me some sunshine. This is ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been living over there, over the state of Florida. Thanks, Todd. Be safe, and
all right.
Good luck to the Wave.
I'll do my best, Todd. Thank you.
And there he goes. Joey, resident meteorologist as well here in the Sports Hangover. We like to play one. Again, I just saw the very latest report. Yeah, it's basically starting Thursday, and then all weekend it's going to be a tropical sort of system. Is it the same one in Florida that's making its way here?
Yep.
Is that what it is? Oh, okay, great. So what Todd's getting, we're getting this weekend. At least it's moving from Florida, though. But, yeah, we're going to have a lot of rain over the weekend. So get that grass cutting done this week, because you're not going to be able to on the weekend. Our thanks to everybody that joined us today. Brian Johnson, Alex Asaro, Cody Worsham, Dino Hansen, Marlon Favorite, and the Graf just now. Matt Moskonen, after further review, he is up next. We'll see you tomorrow. Don't forget tonight, NOLA Golf Academy, followed by Eastern Conference Finals Game number 4 on ESPN New Orleans.